In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Betches Media presents.
Donald Trump was a stain on our country.
I'm someone's daughter, too.
That's what I'm saying!
So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And I'm Dylan Hafer.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Millie, I know our listeners have probably been missing you. It's been a minute. Welcome.
How are you doing? I'm good. I'm sorry, listeners.
You started a new job.
I started a new job.
That's huge.
Yes.
You need all the mental space.
I do. Yeah.
So today, Dylan is back, of course, host of Mention It All and Pop Alarm, which I listened to this morning. I'm sure some of our listeners did too, because he has, I would say, our resident Britney expert, but whenever something happens, I'm like, Dylan's our resident blank expert. So he's back.
I have an eclectic knowledge base, I would say. And because it's wild, because between this and all of the legal shit that Bravo people have been getting into, I'm like, why am I listening to these hearings? Like,
I know.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the law.
You know, and it's so crazy. My dad, like, I'm like, I want to be a TV writer. I want to do this, or I want to be a comedian. And he's like, well, if you did law school first, you'd be a great TV writer. I'm like, Papi, shut up. But now I'm like, honestly, to be a TV critic, you got to have a law degree.
That's true. Like,
a pop culture correspondent. You have to have, like, legal knowledge.
You really do, because if you get something wrong or use the wrong word, people will tell you. I've been asking my fiance, because he's a lawyer, why he doesn't make $80 million like Tom Girardi. And he explains, because none of them do. That's why he's going
to
prison.
Because Tom Girardi stole that money. But
yeah. I guess that's the legal expertise that I'm missing.
Oh my God. I listened to the whole Britney hearing yesterday, and then had I had to record Pop Alarm for this morning. And then I had an hour before Beverly Hills was on, and Erica's like going through the specifics of her divorce. I'm like, I need a nap right now. Like,
yeah. Listen, white women in the law.
Dylan never stops. Like, if you don't follow Bravo by Betches, it's hard for me not to say to you, Dylan, every day, like, oh my God, this page is so good. Like, you just come up with the coolest content. It's makes me jealous every day. All of my saved Instagrams are Bravo by Betches posts. And I'm like, fuck, that's it. Why didn't I think about doing that for that time Trump did this? It's so good.
Well, I feel the same way about the sup, so.
Oh, that's nice.
I was like, okay, one day I was like, we got to talk about Neely and Phelan. Or not Nene, I'm sorry. Portia and Phelan. And then they're like, no, that's Bravo by Betches. And I'm like, oh, shit, okay.
I barely even know what's going on there.
Okay, well, I got some fucking... Dylan, let's talk, because we got to make a duo.
Yes.
Me, you, and let's try to get, Ray Sani for that one. But anyway.
In the future, there might be some room to do that. There might be bonus sub content in our future. And that is definitely something we could accommodate. We can talk about anything.
Because the filibuster ain't going nowhere. So.
I know, Jesus fucking Christ.
Filibuster ain't going nowhere, so let's just start talking
the Senate's not doing anything, but you know who is? The housewives.
The housewives, listen, they're doing a lot more. They get a lot more passed and not passed.
The housewives are way more eventful than the House of Representatives of late, for sure.
Barely, though, because they be bringing drama. I'll say
the house
that.
Is wild, yeah.
The house is wild.
Luckily, today we're not talking about much politics. So today was a somewhat busy news day. But yeah, the filibuster's not going anywhere. So instead of talking about, whenever we have the nerve to talk about the filibuster, we'll talk about a housewife instead. But today we're talking about the ultimate homebound person, Britney Spears. So after 13 years, this was a big day yesterday. After 13 years, Britney Spears asked a Los Angeles judge to end her conservatorship, which she called abusive multiple times. So the full transcript of this I've seen on Variety. I listened to audio that was recorded, but then it made me feel icky because I don't know if we were supposed to hear that or she knew people would hear it.
I think she did. She did.
Okay.
It's a little weird because she wanted it to be public. And like, I made an account on like the Superior Court website and like could listen to the whole thing live. But it's technically like illegal to record it.
Record it. Got it.
So it's weird because it's like, it's public, but there's like court proceeding rules. But right. I mean, I wouldn't feel bad about listening to a recording because like she said at the very beginning that she wanted it out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think listening to it and reading it is different.
That's a great point.
So I listened to it last night too, but I didn't know you could listen to the whole thing. Did the whole thing like provide more context, or is just the crucial part was her interview or
the highlights?
So the main part of the hearing, like the only real thing on the agenda was her speaking. So like that was definitely the crux of the issue. You know, like no legal decisions were made yesterday. That wasn't kind of the point. But I do think it was interesting because obviously she spoke super passionately and not necessarily in a really technical sense about like the legal process. Mm-hmm. And so afterward, like when the judge was speaking and some of the attorneys were talking, like there's going to be a long road kind of whatever ends up happening. Like as much as we would love, the judge isn't just going to be like, okay, sounds good. No more conservatorship. So I think the legal context is helpful, but definitely from a standpoint of like what matters the most, yesterday it was her speaking.
Yeah, I read the full transcript this morning after reading the highlights, and I would say like if you read the highlights, you got it. But it's just repeated. I mean, it's completely heartbreaking.
I think hearing her actual, but I read it first and then heard the audio, and then hearing the audio. Like, because you're reading this, you're like, oh, this isn't, but then hearing her say it, you're like, oh, okay, like,
yeah,
she's kind of reading it, but she's going off. And then obviously they're not including the curse words or like times where she starts tearing up and getting emotional, which I think was important for me to hear. And then people did note that online that like the way that she talks on Instagram and the way that she talked in this statement were completely different. And that was like important for me to hear too. Mm-hmm.
And for her to say, she specifically said at one point that, you know, I've told everyone for the last couple of years that I'm happy, that I'm okay. And that's a lie. Like I've been lying. And there's been so much analysis of like, are people telling her what to post? Is this tweet actually coming from her? Like all of these questions. And to hear her say like, even when I've sat there and told you in a video that I'm okay, that's me trying to think I'm okay, but I'm not.
To me, it was, I mean, like you said, Dylan, the objective in terms of like getting the process started to end a conservatorship herself, like I think she knew that wasn't necessarily happening yesterday. But to me, it was like, it seemed like she was basically saying to the Free Britney people, like, you're right. You've got it. Like, this is what, correct. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening, which has been sort of the central question for years. Like, does she want this, or is she completely fine? And are we wrong to like speak for her in this way? But to me, it was just, I mean, the audio I saw was just taken via video outside of the courtroom with all of like the Free Britney activists. Just like, it was so rewarding to watch them just be completely validated and her say the things that they have been saying that she feels. It was pretty wild.
I mean, I hate to be like online mobs are good, because, you know, it makes me conflicted, but it's also like, I feel like the online support and people seeing that emboldened her, because a lot of times she noted that she was just embarrassed. No. Like, it's embarrassing what they've been putting her through and stuff. And like, it, you know, I think having that community of support who like see that and know that she's being exploited and are in real time being like, Free Britney, you know, I think that gave her enough like emboldened her to be like, yeah, you know what, I am being abused, I'm not okay, it's not embarrassing, I'm being taken advantage of.
Those were the most heartbreaking parts when she just was like, I'm so sorry, she was just apologizing to the judge. She was like, I'm so sorry, I didn't know that I could petition this, I'm sorry for my ignorance. Oh, it was just like, it made me think about who is around her giving her that impression of herself.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that she brought up that was kind of further talked about after she spoke with the attorneys and the judge was she brought up the fact that she doesn't have the freedom to choose her representation under mm-hmm. the conservatorship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems like she has not a terrible relationship with her attorney, Samuel Ingham, but clearly there's some frustration at least with her there that she's like, this isn't really my choice. And it's interesting because when you think about for somebody in that attorney's position, he's like, okay, am I going to tell her fully like all of the information, which could lead to her like wanting me fired mm-hmm. or something, or am I just mm-hmm. going to kind of like keep the status quo? And I think it's hard because like this has been going on for so long. And obviously there are people like her father who she, you know, really has a lot of anger toward, and it sounds like rightfully so. But then there's people like, you know, maybe her mom or her attorney or people brought up her sister too, that it's like, how, like, what exactly have they done over the last 13 years? Or like, have they ever tried to really help her? Or like, have they been involved? You know, like she was saying that mm-hmm. in the last year, her mom was basically lying to her about stuff not being open during the pandemic, like that she couldn't go get her nails done or anything. And she's saying that she has like household staff that are coming in with, you know, fresh nails every week. And her mom's like, no, you can't go get a manicure. And it's like, okay, like there are so many layers of people that have like done her wrong in the last 13 years that it's like yesterday just felt like such a landmark moment of really mm-hmm. like laying it all out there. And now there are so many less kind of questions of like, how does Brittany feel about this? Is she upset? Is she kind of fine with it? Has she like resigned herself to just, this is what her life is like? And the answer is no, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. She's not okay with it.
Right.
And I think like the thing too, that kind of, you know, makes me feel bad, or was that like she, you know, the whole point of her getting into the conservatorship was like she was in a really abusive, exploitive relationship with this guy who was trying to be her manager, and her parents felt like she wasn't making good choices and stuff. And then like, so I can see, and you know, she's having these public meltdowns or whatever, which is like on one end, like, I could see at the time they're like, she's not making good choices, we got to make these for her. And at the other end, like, now we have such a different understanding of mental health, of like women's choices, of all that stuff, that like, you know, yeah, sometimes people just need to have a public meltdown mm-hmm. and to like figure shit out and then, you know, pick up the pieces on their own. Like, but I think the thing that makes me upset or sad is that Brittany, all sides, Brittany's paying for it. Like, Brittany's mm-hmm. paying for her dad's lawyers, for her lawyers.
You can tell that's
for
pissing her off, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why she has to work so hard. Like, no wonder they make her work 10 hours a day to make, you know, she has a fortune of $60 million. She's paying for it. This is what she said, like, repeatedly, just dozens of people's livelihoods she is supporting. And I loved the point where she was like, do you understand why that's ridiculous? The fact that I provide a living for dozens of people, yet mm-hmm. you say I can't make my own decisions about work.
And yeah. she's saying if she doesn't go to all of her 2 times a week therapy sessions, that they won't give her money to take a vacation. Like, she's not, it's not even like, why am I, you know, paying for this lawyer? It's like, literally, I can't just like spend my own money.
Right. I'm sure if she had some freedom, she'd be more than happy to pay for everybody's lawyer. If it weren't the type of thing where it's like, all right, I get to be free while we figure this out.
Yeah, exactly.
The therapy thing was, she said she was forced to see therapists outside of her home multiple times a week, despite over the years being begged to be treated at home or in a location that is less open to the paparazzi. She says, obviously, everybody cries after therapy. And if you're mm-hmm. Britney Spears, you're probably talking about even really tough shit. And she says she's forced to go in this very high profile area. And she feels like that is by design. So she did yesterday ask to end her conservatorship without being evaluated. This is a process that clearly traumatized her 13 years ago and has not served her well. Mm-hmm. As we said, her father has had complete control of her life since 2008 over her $60 million fortune. She said she's forced to work 10 hours a day, even when she's sick. And like Dylan said, she's denied vacation time because they tell her she needs to get back to work. She said yesterday that she was put on a medication, I believe lithium, when she basically the way she described it was like, I don't want to do, she sounds like she expressed a strong preference in rehearsals for a certain dance move. And they were like, you're being ridiculous. You're being irrational.
That part was really, that really hit me because I've been like such a fan of Britney for such a long time. And when she was talking about rehearsing for that Vegas show, which would have been like end of 2018, she was saying, you know, like I was totally with it. I was literally teaching the choreography to the dancers. Like she said, I wasn't good. I was great. And, you know, for her to hear her speak passionately about her career like that, we haven't really gotten that in a long time because everything has been so like on hold with this conservatorship. But then to hear that they said she was being difficult, they said she wasn't, you know, didn't have her shit together. And then she says she was basically falsely accused of not taking her medication by people who wouldn't even have that knowledge of, because she was saying, I took my medication in the morning. They said I wasn't taking it at rehearsal. And it's like, yeah, I didn't take it at rehearsal because I took it in the morning. And then they're like using this fictional story of not taking the medication as like the justification for putting her on lithium and sending her to this.
Can you talk about the rehab? This is, I had a hard time understanding this. Like, it sounds like in 2018, she went to some sort of rehab that was incredibly traumatizing.
Yeah, I think it was two parts, right? Like it was like first, it was like an intake thing to go to another kind of rehab, right, Dylan?
Well, she described that there was like this house and like it was a, I would put rehab program in quotes, that was basically put together by her father. So like she wasn't, it wasn't like a rehab center.
They're like,
it
you're going like, to rehab Britney so they could just basically keep her detained.
Right. It was like, you're going to go to this house. She said she was watched by, you know, like nurses and staff and whoever 24 hours a day. She specifically said they watched her when she changed, when she was naked. And you know, this was when she said she was working still 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off. And you know, that during this time, she basically was treated like a prisoner and that all of this was completely just the decision of her father and whoever else was, you know, involved on this team. And so that's not like a medical diagnosis or like a doctor says that you should go to a treatment center. That's
like an abduction.
That's like I mean, she compared her situation to sex trafficking.
I know. Yeah.
Because they took her passport and credit card.
Yeah. And so she was saying at one point that she cried on the phone to her dad for an hour and she said he loved every second of it. And so clearly it wasn't like, there are parts of this situation, like the therapy and stuff, like it's like, okay, like I don't know what her medical treatment at this point should be. Like, obviously we don't have all the information there, but like nobody's medical treatment should be being locked in a house and working 7 days a week and not having like basic human freedoms. And so that's the kind of thing where it's like, there's no justification for that. If what she's saying is true, like there's no reason that that is something that ever should have happened.
I think too, the confusing part or the thing that I got clarified from like listening to her was that like, there were portions of it where it was that like private, like house situation. And then there was some kind of group therapy situation or group rehab center that she went to. And they said that like, the requirement to be in this program that will help you is for you to go to all these intakes and all this shit. And when she got there and she talked to other people, none of them had to do anything that she had to do. So that was like, an eye opener for her and stuff. And I think too, the thing for me that got me like really sad, like I know she's been dating this guy for a long time and she really loves him or whatever, but like, yeah, she can't get in his car. He can't drive her anywhere. She can't, they can't get married. She can't take out her IUD, which I think was the most shocking thing for a lot of people to hear. A lot of women to hear is that, because she wants to, like, sounds like she kind of just wants to, like, have a family and fuck off somewhere and, like, you know, just be a mom with her kids or whatever. And they're not letting her do that. They're making her work. They won't let her get in, like, take out her IUD. They won't even let her restain her kitchen cabinets because it's going to cost too much money. Like her dad is saying, like, which is her fucking money. Ugh. Her dad doesn't do anything and he wasn't even around when she was growing up. They got divorced. So it's just like crazy to hear that shit.
Yeah. I think that My favorite line is when I got a little nervous when she was like, I don't think you need therapy. You take it to God. And then she was like, look, I know I need a little therapy. But here's the thing. Like,
yeah,
that was so good. But like, you can, there are people that are not allowed to see their kids unless they go to therapy. But those people are not under conservatorships. There are so many, because there are people that you talk to about this and they're like, I don't know. She seems dead-eyed. She seems this, she seems that. It's like, but you understand she has no right. Like, there are so many other ways that you can make sure she is protected and that her family is protected than this. It's unreal. And it happens to disabled people all the time.
For someone to not, it's like, there are so many, like you're saying, options or systems or ways that this whole situation could be handled that would like allow this woman to have a credit card. Like, it's just, there are all these things where it's like, yeah, like we don't know the full scope of, you know, Brittany's mental health picture or like what's going on with her kids and like all of this stuff. Like, you can not be like a 100% expert on every detail and still feel confident that like this situation isn't good and isn't right.
And she has two conservators, right? She has one over like her literal body and personal care and one over her finances, right? Is that how it's working right
now? Yeah, so it's been sort of separated in the last couple years. So now there's like this financial trust company that is like the conservator, or like they have basically control of her finances, and she requested that a couple years ago. And then at one point, like her father had stepped down from being a conservator because he was having health issues.
Right.
And so this woman, Jody, was the temporary conservator. And like, so there are like many different layers of it. But I think yesterday, what was so important was she said, I want this to be over. Full stop. It wasn't, because in the past, you know, she's expressed, you know, discontent with certain aspects of it, or like made certain requests about specific parts, but she's never really come out and said like, this is not what I want in any way. Like, I want it to fully just be over. And so I think now it's like, there's no like ambiguity about, oh, like, okay, but like maybe this part of it isn't so bad. It's like, exactly. She doesn't want any of it. So unless there's a really compelling, you know, reason that we don't know why she can't be in charge of her own money, like,
right.
What the fuck's up? Like, come on.
And I think it's because, well, it's just like two things, right? It's like, one, you know, how many men have squandered all their money and like their moms don't come in and step in and like control their finances? Like, one, it's like a lot of parents exploit the fuck out of their kids. Like, I've started to really, my philosophy is that there's no such thing as a child prodigy. It's just parents who are crazy enough to push their fucking kids to exploit them.
Yeah.
I feel like that, like most parents won't do that. Will make their kids go to school and not fucking take 18 hours of voice lessons.
Right. Your kid can just play amazing piano in the comfort of your home.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they're like nutty parents.
Yeah.
So one, and then, yeah, it's just like it's like, she's not going to be giving so many people a piece of her pie, or maybe she doesn't want to be a pop star. You know what I mean? And like, to them, it's like, oh no, she can't. And also another thing that got me was that her son fought her dad. They got in a physical altercation and like got it. And it just reminds me too of like Wendy Williams' son who like got arrested for fucking punching the shit out of the dad, like his dad, because of how he's treating the mom. So I don't know. I just saw like some parallels between like Wendy Williams' son and Britney's son of like, they don't want to see their mom like that either. You know what I mean? Like, they want to be able to do shit with their, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's an interesting comparison, because Wendy is another woman who has been extremely successful, obviously, in her career for decades, but wasn't always sort of treated like somebody, you know, like wasn't really given the, you know, the freedom of somebody who's like, you are, you know, you're like a rich adult woman who has made your own money, like do whatever the fuck you want. Like,
yeah,
it's so crazy to think that this is like such a thing that happens, that it's like, you've worked hard clearly and made all of this money and had all of this success, but somehow you can't be trusted, or you don't have the right to actually enjoy the fruits of that success. And it's like, how many people in the world have had that level of success? Like, Britney Spears is
right.
So, you know, like, just like such a massive, like, worldwide celebrity. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the fact that the conservatorship is still there is the fact that, like, her family knows her value and her long-term value. They know that not only is she worth a lot of money now, she will be worth a lot of money as long as she, I guess, is, like, fit enough to perform. It's like they're thinking about their long-term financial interests. That's why they can't just give this to her, because it's like the worst thing she does is she does have a meltdown and spends all of her money. And right. then, like, sucks for her, but she actually has the skills and talent to maybe make some more, not her right. family.
And trust me, Jamie knows at this point. I think that's why it's so important that in the last couple of years, Britney has said, I'm not performing while my dad is still involved, because Jamie knows that if the conservatorship ends and Britney goes back to touring, he's never getting another cent from her. Mm-hmm. And so she is taking sort of the only way she can, the only power she has right now is to say, I'm not going to go on tour again for you. So either this is going to end, or I'm just not going to go on tour. And
I don't think she even wants to go. I think she wants to just chill. Like, I think she likes performing and all that, but, like, on her terms, take a year off,
right?
Whatever.
And I think she knows that she has to save her money if she is going to choose. Like, it's very clear she knows how her labor provides for her. Like, she has registered
everybody.
That. Yeah, yeah. I think the woman, this made me think too about just the way, especially with the IUD stuff, which obviously evokes, like, really weird forced sterilization and even eugenics when you're talking about intellectual disabilities and stuff, is I feel like in lots of areas of like the law and family, people are always like, there's something we must not know. Like, there is a good reason this is happening. And it's not, like, for us to, like, really pry. But I feel like this and a lot of, like, true crime things and a lot of realizing that the police doesn't always serve people has, like, I feel like, do you guys feel like this is sort of part of that reckoning and part of the public outcry that, like, finally people are just sick of hearing, like, no, mother knows best, we know best, you don't understand. And then finally, like, the veil is lifted.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely, like, it is part of a reckoning of, like, things don't have to be this way. We can reimagine a different possibility where cops, you know, it sounds crazy to connect, like, Black Lives Matter to Britney, but it is just this thing of, like, the way that things are and all this, you know, and, like, the value of human life. I keep going back to that, but it's like, yeah, people are autonomous, or, like, yeah, maybe it is her right to fucking squander her money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's her right.
Some people are difficult. Like, this has made me think too. It's what do we do with challenging people? Not this. There are other, like, you can't just do whatever you want with every person that poses a challenge, whether it's a middle schooler who's, like, getting in fights, or whether it's Britney Spears. Like, we owe more to each other.
And I don't have Britney Spears money, not quite, but like, if I go out and spend my paycheck on something irresponsible, that's my fuck up. Like, that's
nobody
on me.
For you.
And it's like, you know, it would have to, like, I don't know what would have to happen for my mom to be like, hello, court. Like, I think I need to be in control of his finances.
Yeah.
And so to think that it's like Britney is somebody who, you know, even if she has made maybe some poor choices in the past, which we don't even really know with her finances and stuff, like, right. what
I don't doubt that at all. Yeah.
But it's like, okay, so, like, she's a woman who maybe has questionable judgment sometimes. Yeah. Like, and if that's the case, like, sure, she said she needs some therapy. Go to therapy, you know, meet with a financial planner. But, like,
yeah.
You don't
fucking make her.
Right. I was reading about this morning, because this does happen to a lot of people with intellectual disabilities, where their families decide no, and that's not always something they're happy with. There are situations where it sounds like at one point with Britney's situation, it was best for everybody. But there's a difference between, like, conservatorships are like, we have to do this because you can't act in your best interest. We will act in your best interest. But our best interest for all of us is just, like, what we state it is. Like, it is not in my best interest. Like, my stated interest is that I want to have a healthy and productive weekend. But then if I smoke a bowl and eat two bagels, yeah, nobody comes for me and says, well, you're not acting in your best interest. Like, people, mm-hmm. nobody acts in their best interest. Mm-hmm. Like, why mm-hmm. is she, why is, that's a ridiculous standard. Like, everybody is operating. Like, there are challenging people and there are people that cause problems and harm, but this is not the way to react to it.
Yeah, and I guess like kind of my last point or like another thing that was interesting was like that a lot of the stuff, or she was saying like a lot of her recent stuff was sparked by like a dance move that she didn't agree with. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about Homecoming, like with Beyonce, and like Beyonce is notoriously like, you know, mm-hmm. difficult, yeah. not difficult, but like picky. And yeah. like, especially, you know, if you're fucking
particular, she's particular.
But Beyonce had a whole thing with her dad and told him to fuck off.
Right.
And like, they had like a really public, like, he's no longer in charge. And like, that's why Destiny Child can't do any more songs, because the dad owns part of Destiny Child and all that shit. So like, that just like brought up a thing of like, yeah, like if you're that famous and you're that much of a pop star, you're going to be particular. But like, and it's their right to be like, no, I don't like this dance move. Let's do it like this. It's her. It's fucking Britney Spears. Like, let her do whatever she wants. And the other thing too is that, like, yeah, like the, it's just like everyone's so greedy. You know, it's like, you guys live in Louisiana. Like, how much fucking money do you need? You know, like, take the fucking money, take whatever $1 million and go fuck off exactly. the rest of your life. Like, why do you have to keep exploiting and like this long-term vested interest?
I mean, her father sounds like a narcissistic sociopath. Like, it sounds like there's no yeah. reason to do this other than he seems like a motherfucker who loves to control his daughter. And
yeah. And I mean, that's what, you know, she said.
Like, well, guys, we solved it.
We solved Britney. So for the rest of our time, we're going to talk about accusations of colorism in the musical In the Heights, 5 days late.
Sorry.
We have two music. Dylan has a BFA in musical theater.
I do.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So you're going to sing all your thoughts on this, right?
I will just say In the Heights was the first show I ever saw on Broadway. So
oh, wow.
Special place in my heart.
Is that what converted you into?
Oh no, I was here for a theater camp. So
okay. So the movie takes place in New York's Washington Heights neighborhood and stars Anthony Ramos as the main character, who is a bodega owner dreaming of a better life. Like most movies, somebody's dreaming of a better life. Some viewers expressed frustration that In the Heights fell short when it comes to Afro-Latina representation. So members of that community in Washington Heights, specifically Black Dominicans, make up a significant portion of that neighborhood, but they're not very visible in the primary cast of the movie. Instead of having lead roles in the film, darker-skinned Afro-Latino performers are in the background and they have dance roles. Some of the main characters even described as like white passing. So the musical's creator, Lin-Manuel Miranda, I don't know if you've heard of him, responded to a criticism on Monday. He said on Twitter, "I'm seeing the discussion around Afro-Latino representation in our film this weekend, and it is pretty clear that many in our dark-skinned Afro-Latino community don't feel sufficiently represented within it, particularly among the lead roles. In trying to paint a mosaic of this community, we fell short. I'm truly sorry." So did he owe an apology, and how did something fall through the cracks?
Let's ask resident Afro-Latina.
Yes. Actually, I think Dylan should go first here.
Dylan, what do you think? You know, I think, you know, it's really interesting for me, just as, you know, an Afro-Latina. And, you know, that is even something that, I mean, identity is just such a big thing for me. But I kind of feel like you were saying, like Black Dominicans, right now, if you look up Manhattan on a map and you zoom into Washington Heights, it actually says Little Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it's like if you go to Chinatown and you do a musical about Chinatown, and then everybody is Thai, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's just, you know, they're still Asian, right? But like, they're all Thai. And on one end, I feel like it's pretty conflicting, where it's like, on one end, I understand that, you know, I understand for the actors, like, you're just trying to get a job. There's fucking nothing out there for you, all this stuff. Like, but on the other end, like, the lead role is a white Mexican girl. Like, literally, she was in Vida, which I enjoyed, which is a show about East LA and gentrification. And she plays, like, her, the whole thing of her in that role is that she's a coconut. She's brown on the outside, white on the inside, like, whatever. They constantly. So it's interesting in this movie that she comes here and she's like, I'm Dominican.
Yeah.
Like, it's so interesting. Not to say that there aren't white passing Dominican, there are a lot. But, you know, a lot of the thing too that I think a lot of people have to understand is that in Latin America, I'm going to try to, like, a lot of the, like, more, yeah, context, like, a lot of the more, like, well-off people tend to be white, have, like, more white lineage, and a lot of the working class people, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of working class people tend, and especially in New York, like, a lot of the immigrant population are, like, extremely working class, like, I would argue, are from the Alabama of Dominican Republic. That's what, like, my family, you know, like, like, certain parts of Dominican, like yeah, really, really hick. We still say hick in, yeah, like in the Heights, if somebody says hick Dominican, like, you know what they're talking about. So they're like, they're from, like, extremely working class areas and stuff, and they tend not to be, you know, fair skin, straight hair, you know, whatever. So on what, so yeah, like, I kind of feel conflicted on the other end, like, I don't know. I just, like, the longer that I've been, I just, you know, I got frustrated because I'm just like, oh, like, since everybody's tweeting about wanting, like, Black representation in Latin, like, I should be selling out all my shit, right? Like, I should be, I should have no ticket. Like, you know, I kind of, yeah, like, it kind of feels like people are grasping at things to, like, criticize at. I don't know. I've because sometimes it's good natured, like, Dominicans who are like, yo, this doesn't look anything like my Block. This doesn't look anything. You had all these opportunities and you didn't. And two, it's like, Lin-Manuel, like, if you see Hamilton, it's not like he's against casting people of color. Right. So, you know, there's that. And then three, I just kind of feel like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's like, pretty complicated because I'm like, it's so easy to talk shit about everything. Like, more that I work on in TV and the more that I work on stuff and I see people hate on my, and I see, right, people complain about things, I'm like, y'all are just like, you were going to find something to complain about no matter what. And, like, it kind of makes me uncomfortable that my identity is the reason that y'all are complaining about when I've been trying, mm-hmm, to make it in this industry and, like, have been trying to sell my pilots about a Dominican girl in the Bronx or trying to sell my life experience and people don't get it. And they say that there's no demand for it. And then for, like, this major motion picture about where, you know, my family lives and all that stuff, like, for that to be the criticism, it just, like, it just makes me feel weird.
It's weird to call, I mean, what you described is, like, appropriation, is, like, certain people being to benefiting off the experiences of others, but it seems a little more nuanced here because these people obviously are Latina and parts, yeah, I'm sure some of the people were from the neighborhood, and we know Lin-Manuel Miranda is a strong connection to that. So I guess to me, I'm just like, how was nobody, like, we should have somebody in the central main cast.
I think it's hard because I feel like we're getting to a point in, you know, entertainment, casting, whatever, where people understand that that diversity is important. And this is, like, something that you should be, you know, keeping in mind, and you're trying to check this box. And I feel like for this movie, it's like, it automatically checked the box because it's a movie about Latino characters and, you know, they're singing, mm-hmm, in Spanish and there's all of this stuff. And, like, the creative team, you know, the director is Asian and Lin-Manuel and the other writers, you know, are Hispanic. And so it's like, from that, like, studio perspective or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, we don't have to worry about this. Mm-hmm. It checks the box. Like, it's a, mm-hmm, diverse movie, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And so then obviously when they were actually casting the movie, Lin and whoever else was involved in that, they clearly didn't even think about this because, yeah, it's like when he's saying in his apology, it's like, you know, they don't feel sufficiently represented. We fell short painting the mosaic. It's like, it's not like, oh, we cast we cast two, you know, mm-hmm. Afro-Latino people, and we should have cast four. You know, it's like basically they didn't cast any.
Right. Which it was always telling to me that he said in trying to paint a mosaic of this community. It's like, so you're saying you did try to make sure everybody was represented.
Right.
And I think it was very clear that was not the case.
And like, there are specific references throughout the script and the songs to like people being from Dominican Republic, people being Puerto Rican, you know, somebody says they're Mexican, you know, there's like all of these specific references. And like you were saying, Millie, it's not like everybody from the DR looks the same, but clearly mm-hmm. they didn't really actually think through like, okay, so like this character says that they're of this background, so like maybe for that casting we should, you know, look for somebody that really meets this kind of picture of that community. They were kind of just like, okay, like everybody in the movie is, you know, from a Latin American background, so like whoever can play whoever, that works. And like, I think it's a question of like how granular you need to get when you're casting for something like that, because just saying it's an all Latino cast, like clearly there were gaps that they missed.
I mean, I think it's just like you hit the nail on the head, Dylan, of like, they didn't think about it. And it's like, they didn't think about it for two reasons, right? The people up top are, you know, it's indicative of like who's up top, who's making the financial decisions, like, and they're still all like white men who are like whatever. And then two, it's like, you know, people who don't have to think about like, oh, everyone's Hispanic, it's all great. It's like they don't have to, they're not thinking about like racial representation, they don't, that's their privilege, they still have, you know. And and yeah, like it is just about you know. And it's crazy because I think like these conversations are important, but the most important thing is like continue to push forward and make mm-hmm. more and more things so that each project becomes less and less representative of all Latinx people. Because this isn't,
yes.
If you're going to disappoint someone when you try to represent all Latinx people in one thing. And I think like, but this has always happened. Like there are these three, you know, in Dominican history, there are these three sisters. We had like our own kind of Hitler, and his name was Trujillo. And he would just like created a huge genocide of like Black Dominicans and like Haitian, you know, Haitian people and Black Dominican, you know, whatever. And if you embraced at all, like any of your Black features, or if you pronounce things in the way that they felt like were Haitian pronouncing, they would just fucking kill you. So there are these three sisters that started like a revolutionary network called the Mirabal Sisters. And one of them, like, kind of would, you know, Trujillo had a crush on them. It's a really crazy story. Had a crush on one of them, and she would flirt with him so she can go to law school. And they started like an underground network. And basically he assassinated the three sisters. And there's like a huge monument to them. And when they made the movie about this, who were the three sisters? Selma Hayek.
No, are you serious?
I'm 100%.
That's where this is going. That's terrible.
And this is like, but yeah, like they, you know, in these movies.
I thought you were
like,
going to say that's why you can't have white people play them. Not that they actually had white people play them.
No, they had like Selma Hayek and like two other like white Latino Mexican. Mark Anthony was in the movie. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and that was good enough for Hollywood that, you know?
Yeah.
Even when you're telling a story where that's like part of the story, you're still putting it into this like Hollywood contraption of like, it's diverse. And it's like, yeah. Is it?
But yeah, to end, I feel like there was a reaction to Crazy Rich Asians as well. I don't think it was about diversity, but maybe it was like the excesses. But it would be a shame if every time this happens, we punish creators of color like mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel and John Chu, who mm-hmm. are just operating in that capitalist Hollywood commercial mm-hmm. structure. So yeah, like you said, it's like, if this is the fight du jour, that's fine. And it's a conversation worth having, but like, let the people who are impacted have it. Not like, oh, here's the thing we get to all pile on today. Like Bill Maher's like came out this week and said he shouldn't have had to apologize. It's like, I don't want to hear that from Bill Maher.
Yeah,
shut up. Let's hear that from a person impacted.
It's interesting. There was actually sort of a similar controversy with the Disney animated movie Raya and the Last Dragon that came mm-hmm. out a few months ago. And, you know, it's an all Asian cast, but there was criticism because almost the entire voice cast is East Asian. Mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. a lot of the, you know, it takes place in like a fictional land or whatever, yeah. but like mm-hmm. a lot of the influence on the movie is Southeast Asian. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so there was criticism over, you know, you know, the cast was like Awkwafina and Daniel Dae Kim and Benedict Wong and Sandra Oh, all these people.
Korean and Chinese.
Right. And so it's like, okay, so, you know, Millie, like your example earlier of it's like filming a movie in Chinatown and the whole cast is Thai, they kind of actually did the opposite. But it's like, okay, where do we really like actually get real about true representation and not just like we checked the box of like we cast somebody
I
Asian.
I think that's why I was so surprised by Lin-Manuel, because In the Heights as a movie, to me, in my view, didn't need star power to get watched. Everybody was going to watch In the Heights. So I think he had room to find people if they wanted to, who they maybe weren't that famous yet.
They didn't go for star power. I mean, to be honest, true, like there's nobody in the cast, in the main cast at least, that's really like,
Anthony Ramos is a star in this episode.
I mean, Anthony Ramos is a star, but he's not like famous in the way that it's like,
but they've had credits, you know, they're not like Brad Pitt, but they both are have had a lot of credits.
It would almost, be like more, to me, it would almost make more sense if they were like, okay, we're going to cast this, like Jennifer Lopez is going to play this, DiCarlo role or whatever. Right. We're going with like the most famous person we can find. So everybody comes to see this movie. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're just casting like talented people, cast the right talented person. Yeah. Like there's enough talented people in the world. So I think that's kind of, it's like, okay. Yeah. Obviously,
same with the Raya movie. It's those names you listed fell short,
but like, why did you fall short? Because it doesn't actually seem like, it's one thing if you really tried and you still, you know, some people took issue with the way in which you tried, but for it to seem like, okay, I don't really think they actually tried.
Exactly. They just didn't think about it. But to your point, Amanda, and I guess we could, but it's just like, as we move forward, because that is also another argument, like with Asian stuff, and is just, I guess, like it's like, what, yeah, like representation. Like, are we gonna get granular every time? You know, like how granular are we gonna get? What's a win and what's not a win, and all that stuff. And like, I've definitely heard things about Ryan. I've seen conversations and stuff. But I guess when it's time, when it's like actually, the center of it is, you know, people. Yeah.
And the background of it, I think, is that we're not at a place yet where critique does not mean cancellation or that it has no value.
Exactly.
That's why those things become such an issue, is that, like, I think there are lots of Asian Americans, Southeast Asian Americans, who pointed that out and are like, it's still cool. Like, I think you should still watch the movie, but it's worth noting that, you know, next time people could consider this.
And like, let's hope that as there is a next time and there are more of these projects, that we can have, you know, a wider scope of representation. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like, oh, that one Asian movie kind of got it wrong. It's like, hopefully there can be, you know, 50 movies with all of these like diverse casts and telling these diverse stories and inclusion and all of this, so that it's not like, oh, we kind of messed up the one opportunity to tell a story like that.
Yeah. That's a perfect place to end. I'm so glad we didn't say Joe Biden one time. We didn't say Senate one time.
If you were an agent and you're looking for some Dominican projects, please.
We're also listening. If you need to hire Caitlin for some writing, I think I think this weekend I might do a host spotlight on the Sup stories. Now that you've unlocked your Twitter and I feel like I can, you're ready for the exposure.
Oh yeah, we'll do that. My Twitter's unlocked and ready and locked and loaded.
So
if you're looking for a podcast host, I'm too busy. Ask someone else.
Busy doing Pop Alarm every morning. Follow on Spotify.
But if you're listening to a hearing listener. If you're looking for somebody to listen to, put like lawsuits.
If you want very amateur legal analysis,
we got it for Bill. Thank you guys so much for this awesome conversation. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And I'm Dylan Hafer.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.